Coming up on KUCB News, the City Council debates whether to help the state pay for a local fish weir, and state lawmakers near the deadline of the legislative session. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Thursday, April 12, 2018. With grant money drying up, the state wants Unalaska to help fund the salmon weir at McLees Lake. Scientists have used the weir to monitor sockeye for the past 17 years, but now the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has no way to pay for it. Mayor Frank Kelty told the City Council Tuesday that the department is asking Unalaska to cover some of the $80,000 in operating costs. While Kelty says the Whistlow weir isn't the city's responsibility, he's worried that losing run data will force biologists to limit local fishermen at one of the most popular subsistence spots.
They don't have a survey. They're going to be very conservative on how close they're going to let people get there and how much fish they're going to take.
That did not persuade Councillor Sherry Coleman. She says the fishing at Whistlow, way out in Reese Bay, will be fine without a year of detailed data collection.
I'm against this. If you're going to throw money at a fisheries, well, let's look at our own tributaries.
An Alaska resident, Susie Golodoff, agreed. During public comments, she told councillors that she's more concerned about the health of salmon runs along the road system.
I kind of wish if we had money for streams at Morris Cove, Summer Bay, and this local stream up here that's really hurting with the reds, really hurting.
The council directed city officials to take a look at the budget and determine if there's any money to spare for salmon monitoring. If there is, Councillor Roger Rowland says he'll support it, at least for this summer.
While I'm interested in funding this, I would not be doing it with the assumption that the state would eventually step in. I would be doing it with the assumption that we would be doing it for our people.
The council is also passing on the state's funding request to the Unalashka Corporation, the Kawalungan Tribe, and the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Community Development Association. But if there's not enough money to operate the weir, the state will still run aerial surveys. The group opposing a controversial ballot initiative to strengthen salmon habitat protections has raised more than $2 million since January. That's roughly 10 times more than its supporters brought in over the same period. Those figures include non-monetary contributions like air travel and staff time. In a recent filing with the Alaska Public Offices Commission, the opposition group, called Stand for Alaska, reported major contributions from some of Alaska's biggest industry players. Oil company BP gave more than $500,000, while ConocoPhillips gave $250,000. Other big donors included mining companies like the Pebble Limited Partnership and Donlin Gold. Meanwhile, Yes for Salmon, the group that's supporting the ballot initiative, reported contributions of a little more than $200,000. Its largest contribution was $100,000 from John Childs, the chairman of a Massachusetts private equity firm. He's also on the board for the Wild Salmon Center, an environmental group backing the initiative. Yes for Salmon supporters say the state's current permitting rules are too lax, while the industry argues the measure would effectively shut down a wide range of projects. But it's not yet guaranteed that voters will even get to weigh in on this initiative. The state is opposing it in court, and the Alaska Supreme Court will hear arguments in the case later this month. This year, Togiak could see one of the earliest herring harvests ever recorded. KDLG's Izzy Ross has the story after speaking with fish and game biologist Tim Sands.
We're going to fly our first survey on Friday, and then I expect we'll be seeing herring by the 20th, if not sooner, you know.
That would be the Togiak fishery's second earliest start on record. The earliest recorded date a biomass was spotted in the district was April 14th, 2016. But because of the unusual timing, fishing only began 3 days later. Herring spawn timing depends largely on water temperature on the spawning grounds, and a warm spring means an early biomass arrival. The total forecasted biomass for 2018 is 136,756 tons, slightly higher than last year's forecast.
We have a 20% exploitation rate, so there's 27,351 tons available to harvest.
Of the predicted available harvest, 1,500 tons are allocated to the spawn on the kelp fishery, 1,810 tons are allocated to the Dutch Harbor food and bait fishery, which is harvested in July. The remainder of the predicted harvest is split between Togiak's Purse Seine and Gillnet fisheries. The forecast is calculated with an age structure analysis model to predict the herring population. Predictions are based on aerial surveys and harvest sampling when biologists collect data on the age, sex, length, and weight of the fish.
We look at the amount of catch in each age class and forecast a population for that age class. By doing that year in and year out, we can look and see how much we think the age class is each year, and that helps us fine-tune the model.
This year, the ADFNG enlisted a statewide herring biologist to lead analysis efforts. The department also moved their model from an Excel spreadsheet to an AD Model Builder program. Sand says that the program allows biologists to change the weights on the data to produce more accurate predictions.
Before, the aerial survey was weighted higher and the age composition data was weighted lower, and we kind of reversed that because we have more confidence in our age composition information than we do in the aerial survey information.
Sand says that preseason talk put prices between $50 and $100 per ton, but he says that it's too early to know for certain.
It's all rumor at this point. It could be higher than that because of Sitka, but it might not make a difference. It all depends.
The Sitka Sac Row herring fishery shut down early this year after falling far short of its quota, which may push prices up in other regions. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Governor Bill Walker has asked the chairs of both finance committees in the legislature to reallocate $10 million in the budget to start bringing the state's 911 system up to date. One in four Alaskans doesn't have access to a standard 911 emergency number. And as KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports, the system has been impairing rural residents' ability to reach first responders for years.
If you call 911 in rural Alaska, there's a good chance something will go wrong. Let's say you need help in Aniak, for instance. Commissioner of Public Safety Walt Monaghan attended a meeting in the village last spring.
They said, you know, by the way, sometimes when you dial 911, you get an answering machine, and that floored me.
That doesn't just happen in Aniak. The Department of Public Safety's John Rockwell says he's heard plenty of stories like this. Then there are the communities where 911 just sort of dead ends. Rockwell says that happened to a friend of his when she was visiting a village.
The person she was visiting had an allergic reaction to something, and she went to dial 911, and she got the message, I'm sorry, but this service is not available in your area.
When that didn't work, the woman's friend managed to gesture to a 10-digit non-emergency number written on the wall. The woman tried to call it.
But unfortunately, she didn't have her contacts in, so she couldn't even read the number by the wall.
In Alaska, 911 runs into trouble in the best of times. In January, KYUK reported that Bethel's 911 system can't track callers' locations if they're on a cell phone. Residents are encouraged to tell police officers exactly where they are if they need help. But if you leave incorporated areas like Bethel for Alaska's rural communities, the problem can get a lot worse. Many communities can't fund their own police departments or dispatch centers. So in villages like Aniak, 911 is redirected to the area's lone Alaska State Trooper. In communities without that level of law enforcement, emergency calls might be directed to the mayor's personal number or the fire chief's. If anything goes wrong with that person's phone, or if that person leaves town, communities can lose their emergency call services. And in many cases, there's only one person available to pick up the calls, which Commissioner Walt Monaghan says poses an obvious problem. Let's say there's a fire or an earthquake.
Even if the VPSO or the trooper responds to the call, what happens when there's a second call? Who answers that?
Monaghan says the Department of Public Safety has a plan to fix this. The solution is a statewide 911 system. A number of rural emergency calls are already redirected to a state trooper dispatch center in Fairbanks. Monaghan is fortifying that center now so that it can take calls from a wider range of rural areas. By June 2018, he says that callers should be able to call 911 anywhere in Alaska. But Monaghan says the Fairbanks Center could become overloaded, and it still wouldn't have the technology it needed to track callers' locations, which in rural Alaska can be a problem.
It gets kind of dicey if you're out there on the river or on a snow machine and you're lost, disoriented, and you dial and we ask you, where are you? Then you're going to say, well, I'm lost.
Governor Walker asked the legislators' finance committee chairs to take $10 million from oil exploration in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and put it instead into expanding the 911 system. The money would go towards creating a state trooper dispatch center in Anchorage and implementing next-gen technology so that 911 could identify where callers are. Governor Walker says right now, improving rural public safety has to be more urgent than promoting oil drilling on the Arctic coastal plain. In Bethel, I'm Teresa Kotsarilis.
The Alaska Senate could vote on the state budget as early as today. Once the Senate passes it, the House would have to vote on whether to accept the Senate's version. If it does not, the two chambers will work out their differences in conference committee. The 90-day legislative session is scheduled to end on Sunday, although it's not likely lawmakers will be done by then. Voters passed an initiative in 2006 that set the session length at 90 days under state law, but the legislature can go past that date, as the state constitution sets the length at 121 days. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.